This is All Things Considered on 90.1 WABE. I'm Dennis O'Hare. While negotiators in Washington for the administration and Congress battle over the fiscal cliff and what happens if the nation goes over it, not as much attention has been paid to what happens to the states if an agreement is not reached. But lawmakers at the state capitol are watching it very closely, none more so than the chairman of the Senate Budget Committee, Senate Appropriations Committee. He's held that post for many years now. He is Republican Jack Hill from Reidsville. Senator Hill, welcome back. Good to have you.
Thank you. It's good to be here.
I take it, just to start with, that you're not one of those who are, as we have heard from some folks on both sides, who are saying, well, it might not be so bad. Let's just go over it and see what happens.
Well, I may be in the middle, because there, as far as the state budget's concerned, there are some effects that would happen, but maybe are not as severe as maybe the impact on the overall economy of the state from sequestration.
And sequestration is the automatic spending cuts right. That would kick in, automatic tax increases that would also yeah. kick in. So it sounds like you're saying a recession, which everybody is saying would happen if the deadline is missed, would be a lot worse than the actual cuts or tax increases themselves?
Well, there's an argument to be made on both sides. I think Warren Buffett made an interesting point the other day when he said, you know, you really can't cut spending without cutting spending, and that he thinks the economy is more resilient than many people believe. I have similar beliefs in that I think that what will have to happen in order to cut spending, you're going to have to cut spending somewhere. So there are going to be effects from it. What I think Congress is struggling with is the same thing we have struggled with in cutting our budget over the past 4 years, is how do you trim your budget, which we have done by $2 billion, and how do you keep that from affecting essential state services? I think the state of Georgia has been pretty successful at that. Georgia, and there's a study out by the Pew Center from the states that points out your relativity to those sequestration cuts. Georgia, in most cases, is more affected than the average state because of our heavy reliance on defense industries and those kinds of things. So those are painful and all. But I would say this in regards to cuts in income tax rates and so forth. If you look ahead 6 or 8 months, it might be that the positive things that would happen from allowing some of these tax cuts to expire, the positive things that would happen from a confidence standpoint might overshadow the costs that would be very gradual anyway. When you're talking about income tax deductions for individuals, for example, or for businesses, those changes in tax rates take effect week by week. And are cumulative. So if we could get the economy growing again in 6 or 8 months, it may be that what would happen is that our economy would start to become stronger. We'd start to do more hiring, more and consumers would spend more, which might overshadow those cuts that are the income tax reductions that don't happen.
In looking at that Pew study, one of the things that struck me was how much of our state budget might be affected by the cuts in defense. We're talking about a little over 5% of the state budget, which is a considerable amount of cut. Wouldn't that by itself cause us some problems? Aren't some of these cuts really hitting people who can afford them the least? You're looking at cuts to, say, homeless mental health. You're looking at cuts to families and children in nutrition, child care tax credit, earned income tax credit, those things that might go away if we don't make a deal.
Well, what we as a state would do is of those cuts that flow through our budget, we're going to look at those individually. And on a case-by-case basis, we would look at whether we needed to try to find the funds to replace any or part. For example, the WIC program is a $300 million program. The 8% cut to that is $20 or $30 million. Well,
a WIC program is families and children, food and that kind of thing.
Food and baby milk and those kinds of things. Well, a cut to that seems like a lot of money, and $27 million or whatever it is. On the other hand, that doesn't mean that women would not receive WIC coupons this month. They just wouldn't get quite as many. So whether that's a damaging need that hits those that are vulnerable or not is arguable, I believe. I would just say this: as we look at which programs are effective, we would try to lessen that effect if it was hitting those most vulnerable citizens. There aren't many programs that couldn't stand an 8% cut, frankly.
Do we have the flexibility and the reserves to do that, though?
Well, you know, that would be a problem. It would be a problem. But there again, you're talking about 8%, so the numbers are not huge. I just think that a change in the confidence of the public in where this economy is going and where this government is going and addressing that is so important. Businesses are not expanding. They're not investing. Consumer confidence. Now, obviously, the jury's out on citizen spending, you know, during the holidays. But for those people with a job, I don't know that changing that income tax rate is all that big of an effect for people who are working. What I'm concerned about is all those people who can't get a job because there's no growth in the economy. We need to do everything we can to help this economy start to grow again.
So if I hear you right, you're saying it's more important to get a deal because of the psychological effect and a possible recession than it would be because of any cuts to state programs. Is that right?
To some degree, I believe that. I think that you can't cut – I agree with Buffett from the standpoint that you can't cut spending without cutting spending. You're going to have the hue and cry from anybody whose budget might be cut or whose constituency might be cut from the effects of any spending reductions. But I'm telling you, you can't cut spending without cutting spending. And overall, there's going to have to be some effects somewhere for us to get a handle on and to keep from going off whatever cliff we're talking about.
So you're saying with or without a deal, whether we go over the cliff or not, there are going to have to be spending cuts that will affect state programs.
Absolutely. And what we will do is, what we would do, and hopefully what Congress will do, is try to lessen those effects on vulnerable citizens and try to help low-income people survive as best we can. But I still say someone who's working is a lot better off today than someone who's not working. And the 27 million people that don't have a job need some confidence rebuilt in this economy. And I don't believe we're going to get it until people believe that Congress is addressing the problem we've got with the deficit.
But because of is what you call the meat axe approach that would take effect if we go over the fiscal cliff, you mentioned the folks without jobs. Won't some of the programs that would be cut here in the state be labor, unemployment benefits, those kinds of things?
We looked at those. Of those that flow through the state budget, they have, you know, the ones that I think I would be concerned about are the Title I education programs that hit low-wealth school systems.
Yeah, and affect, reading programs and things like that.
And mental health, the programs are folks that help Title I and those that are disabled, the students in school that are disabled, those services. There again, though, it's a cut and not an abolition of the program itself. So I would say this, there aren't many federal programs that couldn't stand an 8% cut.
Aren't there two other problems, though, with just letting things slide? And one is you really don't know until the last minute what Congress is doing. And number two, the feds so far really haven't included the states in the discussions.
Well, that's true. they've just got to get off the dime and do something. You know, I mean, I think that's what the whole world, the whole country is sitting here waiting on Congress to do that. And hopefully the president and our congressional leaders will do just that, is that at the very last minute, under whatever pressure there is, they will strike a deal. We would be hopeful that that's a deal that won't affect the states too much. But, I look at the possibilities, and I don't see anything there that we can't overcome.
But if it goes to the last minute, or if, in fact, they say, okay, we can't make the deadline, but we're going to do incremental changes, we'll reach a deal even after the deadline, how is it possible to put a budget for the state together with the legislature coming into session in January so that people know what programs will be there and what they would be?
Well, if you look at the $11 billion that flows through the state budgets, about half of that is Medicaid, which is not sequestered. As we look at the programs that are subject to sequestration, there's not that many that are truly essential, as we would think of in terms of being essential. There are some programs that does worry me when looking at meals for senior citizens and those kinds of things. And then when I say we would address those on a case-by-case basis, in the past, when we've had cuts to programs that affect senior citizens that are really essential, like meals and those kinds of things that are difference makers, we would do our very best to replace as much of those cuts as possible.
But any idea where that money would come from? It has to come from someplace else.
Well, that's the issue, and but we've done it before. We've struggled before and tried to find dollars to replace those services. But I just don't see a wide range of services in these programs that are affected as being something that's showstoppers for the state. I think they're manageable from the state standpoint.
And talking to other folks in this capital, you hear people with some very dire predictions of what will happen if a budget deal is not reached. So this is going to just blow up our budget. As the chair of the Senate Budget Committee, you don't sound like you think that's really going to happen. It'll be painful, but you're saying we could get through it?
I think the most painful cuts are those that are going to local education facilities. As I look at where those cuts are, they don't actually flow through the state budget. Those would be painful and would be take some really strong management from local school systems to handle those. But as I look at those that are essentially funding through the state budget, I think we could handle those.
Governor Deal just ordered state departments to cut 3% again across the board because of the slow recovery and a little bit slower than expected state revenue collections. So what would you say to somebody, a department head, an employee, or a recipient of a program who says, look, sure we could cut more, but we've already cut to the bone. We can't take much more.
These 3% will be painful cuts, and there's a face on those cuts as well. What we'll have to do is to look at essential state services and work with the governor's office and planning and budget to try to make those cuts as painless as possible. But you can't cut spending without cutting spending. You just can't do it. And these 3% cuts will be painful because state agencies have already cut to the bone. That's true.
And if there's more on top of that because a budget deal isn't reached?
Well, I don't see that much effect to the state from a lack of a budget deal. I really don't. As I look at those cuts, they appear to me fairly innocuous, frankly.
Senator Jack Hill is the chair of the Senate Appropriations Committee. He's a Republican from Reidsville. Senator Hill, thanks again for giving us this much time. We really appreciate
it. Thanks a lot. Good to be with you.